Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 4, Better Safe Than Sorry. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. This is the show that's dedicated to helping aspiring home cooks grow their skills and confidence in the kitchen, so they can start cooking up memories with family and friends. Today, we're going to be covering a very important topic when it comes to cooking at home. And I'm going on a little bit of a different track with the program today because typically I might talk about a recipe or a food or something like that. But today, I'm taking a question we had on the Facebook page and I'm kind of expanding it to take up a whole show because I think it's a very, very important topic. Jennifer on our Facebook page, in response to my last episode on talking about those really delicious meals that we make starting in the fall time that usually end up with leftovers, she said her favorite part of those meals, or one of her favorite parts, is the leftovers. And she thought it would be a great idea if I talked a little bit about how to store and handle leftovers safely. That was a really, really good question, and it got me thinking about food safety in general. And I thought maybe I should put together a program that covers it from the beginning to end, because leftovers are kind of the end of a process of home cooking, right? You've already prepped the food, you've already made it, cooked it, you've already eaten some of it, and now you're putting leftovers in the fridge for later. So I'm going to talk about dealing with leftovers a little bit later in the show, but first I want to cover some of those other points that get you to leftovers, the handling the raw foods and prepping them through the cooking process, all the way down to the leftovers. And I want to say right off the bat, I hope this episode doesn't come out sounding scary. If you have experience in the kitchen and you have experience cooking at home, this is all going to be familiar to some degree to you. You're probably going to learn some new things in this episode about handling that maybe you didn't know explicitly, or maybe you've done things a certain way in the past that maybe aren't the best practice. So you're probably going to learn some things today. But for new cooks or people that don't have much experience in the kitchen, or people that are just literally starting out on home cooking, I don't want this to turn out sounding like it would just be easier to, you know, run through rush hour traffic with a blindfold on than it would be to get in the kitchen and cook something that's not going to kill people. It's really not that way at all. It's really easy to be safe in the kitchen. And most people that have experience in the kitchen do most of these things intuitively already. And it's going to sound like when you get to the end of this episode that it's just really complicated, and it's not at all. When it's all listed out kind of in sequential order like this, it's going to sound like a lot to take in. But I want this to be a resource that you can go back to several times and listen to if you need to get some pointers. I'm also going to put in some resources and links in the show notes, which you'll be able to find at kitchencounterpodcast.com/4, because this show, while we'll cover most of the basics, it's not going to be comprehensive. So if you need to get a hold of a food cooking temperature chart, for example, or a chart that tells you how long you should keep certain types of leftovers in the fridge before throwing them out, I'll provide resources for those in the show notes. So you can always come back to that page for your food safety questions and hopefully find the resource that you need if it's not in this episode. So while I don't want to scare people, I do want to impress upon everybody listening that food safety is a big deal. It's important. A lot of people every year in the United States get sick from bacteria that they pick up from improperly cooked or handled food. In fact, according to the U.S. government website, foodsafety.gov, which, by the way, is one of those resources I'm going to list that has tons and tons of really good information. But according to that website, this year alone, 1 in 6 Americans are going to be sickened by a foodborne bacteria. So just to do the quick math, there's about 320 million people in the United States. That means about 53 million or so this year alone are going to become sick from food. That is a lot of people. And, you know, foodborne illnesses can range anywhere from just a real mild upset stomach to becoming violently ill to, in some rare cases, death. So it's really not something to take lightly. But again, I don't want to sound, you know, scary here. It's not hard to be safe in the kitchen. And if you do things right, you're not going to run into any trouble. Now, for this episode, I'm going to put things kind of in sequential order. and I'm going to break them up into three categories just for easy consumption. So I'm going to talk first about food prep and handling ingredients, what to look out for there and some best practices. Then I'm going to talk about cooking food properly to make it safe to consume. And then after that, I'm going to tackle that question that Jennifer had about leftovers. In my mind, probably one of the riskiest times in the kitchen when it comes to safely handling food is during the prep. That's when you're dealing with the raw ingredients, you're getting your food ready to cook. And that's a great opportunity for bacteria to get spread around the kitchen. So there's several things you can do to ensure that doesn't happen. And the most important is you should wash your hands often. So always keep your hands clean in the kitchen. I can't stress how important this is. There's not a rule, there's not a limit on washing your hands too many times while you're in the kitchen. So always keep your hands clean. That's going to prevent any bacteria from transferring from one type of food to another. And particularly, you should always wash your hands when you're done handling one type of food. For example, let's say you're cooking chicken breasts. After you've handled those, you absolutely need to wash your hands before you touch anything else in the kitchen. Now, that being said, I want to talk about some of the different ingredient types that pose a risk in the kitchen. The biggest offenders are going to be your seafoods and your meats and your poultry. So those are the items in the kitchen that you want to keep the closest eye on. And if you don't already, you should probably get yourself a cutting board that's specifically used for your meats, your seafoods, and your poultries. And you should get a different cutting board that you're going to be using for your vegetables and your fruit. You don't want to use the same cutting board for meats. So for example, you take that chicken breast, you don't want to cut up your chicken breast on that cutting board, put it on a plate, and then immediately grab your onion and dice up the onion on that same cutting board that you just used to cut up raw chicken. That's not good because there is salmonella in that chicken potentially that can be transferred to that onion. And let's say you're using that onion to sprinkle over the top of a salad. That could be really bad news. So always keep your meats, poultries, and seafoods separate from your vegetables until you're cooking them, if that's what the recipe calls for. Also, if you're using your favorite knife in the kitchen, for example, and you've just cubed up that chicken breast, make sure you wash that knife thoroughly before you go and you start cutting up that onion, for example, because that's another easy way for bacteria to be spread from one to the other. There's also kind of another myth when it comes to handling meats that I'd like to address real quickly, and that's if you buy, and I'm going to use chicken again because that's just the easiest example at hand, but let's say you buy a package of chicken breasts, you get those home, a lot of people, what they'll do is they'll open up the package and they'll rinse off the chicken in the sink because they think that's getting rid of bacteria that's on the surface of that chicken. Well, in reality, what's probably happening is you're splashing bacteria from that chicken into your sink. You're probably getting some water around the edge of the sink. And then when you go to move that chicken from the sink to the cutting board, you're probably dripping water with bacteria in it on the countertop. Really, the best way to kill bacteria in meat and chicken is to cook it thoroughly. So there's really no need to rinse your chicken off or your meat off in the sink before you do anything. It's not going to get rid of bacteria, or at least it's not going to kill any bacteria. And in reality, you'll probably end up spreading it around your kitchen. So stop doing that if you're doing that now. Just take the meat out of the container and prepare it for cooking right away. Now, another thing that folks will do if they're taking meat out of the freezer is they will put that in a bowl or on a plate and they will let that sit out at room temperature to thaw. The thinking being it's been in the freezer, bacteria hasn't had a chance to accumulate in the meat. It's going to be completely safe as it thaws. But in reality, when meat warms up towards room temperature, that's a wonderful opportunity for bacteria to replicate rapidly. So bacteria really thrives between 40 degrees Fahrenheit and 140 degrees Fahrenheit. So as long as your ingredients or your foods are in that temperature range, bacteria is going to be doing its best to multiply. So you want to keep your thawing meat in the refrigerator. You could thaw meat, for example, in a Ziploc bag submerged in ice water. So there are some things you can do if you need to thaw it quickly. You could also thaw it in the microwave, but just keep in mind that when you're warming that meat up, bacteria will thrive. So you need to be sure that when you go to cook it, you're cooking it through properly. Another thing that you don't want to do at room temperature with meat, poultry, or seafood is marinate it. Again, conventional wisdom being that if you put it in an acidic marinade, the acid in the marinade will kill any bacteria or at least prevent it from growing in the product. And that's just not the case. Again, bacteria can actually grow very rapidly in a marinade, especially, again, when it's anywhere between that 40 degree to 140 degree Fahrenheit range. Whenever the product is in that range, bacteria will do whatever it can to grow. So if you're going to marinate anything, you should put it in the refrigerator. And then I also recommend whenever you're done dealing with a certain category of ingredients, so you have your protein, your meat, your seafood, your poultry, when you're done prepping that, I really recommend you just kind of stop what you're doing and you clean up the area. You know, you clean off the cutting board, you put it in the dishwasher, you wipe off your countertop with some disinfectant, you just wash your hands thoroughly. So just clean up your area, and that's really going to prevent yourself from cross-contaminating other materials you're going to work with. So let's say you bring over your other cutting board, you've washed your knife, you've washed your hands, you've cleaned the countertop off. When you bring those vegetables over to cut them up, there's not going to be anything left from that chicken you were just handling to contaminate them. So always keep your station clean in between those different types of products that could cross-contaminate. A couple of other ingredients I just want to mention that I haven't talked about yet in the food prep section that can cause some risk for foodborne illness in the kitchen are eggs and unpasteurized dairy products. So if you use raw milk or cheese made from raw milk, you really need to be careful with that because it's not been pasteurized. It can harbor some bacteria. So when you're cooking with those particular ingredients, make sure you're cooking whatever you're putting that into is cooked up to a proper temperature so it can kill any bacteria that are in there. And then, of course, as far as eggs, you should treat raw eggs with the same kind of care that you treat raw meat. Keep it separate from other ingredients. Clean up if you spill any. Just kind of those basic things I talked about. So just to kind of recap food prep best practices, wash your hands a lot. Again, you cannot wash your hands too much while you're cooking and handling food in the kitchen. Probably the most important is keep your food separated. So again, keep your meat, poultry, seafood separate from your vegetables, fruits, and other things that you're going to be cooking with to avoid cross-contamination. And that goes for all of the utensils and cutting boards that you're using as well. Don't use the same utensils or cutting boards unless you've washed and cleaned them thoroughly in between. Don't thaw your meat or marinate your meats at room temperature. That will allow bacteria to accumulate. And when you're done prepping, make sure you clean up your area before you move on to other activities. Okay, let's talk about the actual cooking and food safety. I mentioned a few minutes ago about how bacteria thrives in temperatures between 40 degrees and 140 degrees Fahrenheit. What does that mean exactly? Well, it means if you keep your foods below 40 degrees, and by the way, your refrigerator should be set to stay between 32 degrees and 40 degrees Fahrenheit. If you keep your food below 40 degrees, there will still be bacteria present and bacteria can still replicate and grow, but at a much, much, much reduced rate. So if you keep it below 40 degrees, you're good there. And then above 140 degrees at about 145 degrees, bacteria can't duplicate and replicate anymore. It kind of loses that ability. And then when you get even higher, you get up to about 165, that actually kills bacteria at that temperature. So when I talk about cooking temps and times here, keep in mind that different ingredients have different optimal cooking temperatures to kill and make them safe. And rather than list off line item by line item of what ingredient and what temperature, I'm just going to put a link in the show notes. Again, if you go to that foodsafety.gov website, they have a link to proper minimum safe cooking times and temperatures. It's really a handy chart. It'll just give you all the ingredients you're probably ever going to want to work with and how long and at what temperature you should cook them to. And I should mention right now that if you think you can tell that a piece of meat is cooked or a piece of seafood or a piece of chicken is cooked and done just by looking at it, you're probably wrong. Any meat can look, have the appearance of not being done. It can look pink while it is actually cooked to a proper safe temperature and completely safe to eat. And at the same time, you might have products that look completely done to your eyes, but aren't quite and might have some harmful bacteria. So you really don't want to try to eyeball this kind of stuff if you're talking about food safety. So what you really want to do, and this is an essential item that you absolutely have to have in your kitchen if you're going to be doing any sort of cooking, is a food thermometer. The best kind, in my opinion, are the instant read digital thermometers, and you don't need anything fancy. You don't need the kind that run along a cable and sit in your pot roast in the oven with a little timer that sits on top of the counter. Those are great. I have one. I love it. But really all you need are the kind that have the long metal skewer with the temperature gauge at the end that you can just pop open the oven and check your temperatures. I'll put a link to a couple of thermometers in the show notes that I recommend if you'd like to check those out. So I mentioned that when you get up to 165, you start really killing off the bacteria that's going to cause any problems with food safety. But 165 isn't actually the required temperature for all foods and products. So for example, if you're making a steak, a beef steak, and you don't want it to be leathery and totally unedible, you don't have to cook it to 165. If you cook it to 145, for example, and let it rest for 3 minutes, you're good. You're going to eliminate most of that harmful bacteria. Believe it or not, pork is the same way. There's been an attitude towards pork for a long time, and you know, pork chops or ham or whatever, that there is a lot of harmful stuff in there, like trichinosis, for example. But you do not have to cook pork to 165 or higher. In fact, it's kind of like beef. If you cook it to 145 and let it rest, you're going to be okay. The items that you really want to be careful about and you want to cook through to 165 are your poultry products, your chickens, your turkeys, your game birds, all that kind of stuff. The thing about chicken, too, I want to mention. So how many of you have ever grilled chicken breasts on the barbecue, or maybe you just baked them in the oven? Maybe you've prepared it, or maybe someone else has prepared it, and they just turn out gross. They're just dry. They're like eating meaty chalk. They're just no good because they've been cooked to such a temperature. They've been cooked way past 165, way longer than recommended, and they're just inedible. Another thing that meat thermometer is going to do for you is you're going to be able to test those chicken breasts, and you're going to be able to hit them at just the right temperature, and they're not going to be completely dried out and inedible. So I can't stress again how important that meat thermometer is for your kitchen. You have to get one right away. So when it comes down, again, to cooking anything like meats or seafoods or poultry or anything like that, you really need to get a meat thermometer, and you just need to check out the cooking temperatures and times and stick to that. It's really as simple as that. Now, when you're cooking other things like on the stovetop, perhaps you're cooking sauces or soups or things like that, it's kind of a combination of temperature and time. You know, for some recipes, you're not going to bring everything to a rolling boil for 5 minutes. That's would kill everything in that dish. But, you know, simmering at a low temperature, at a lower temperature for a longer period of time is going to have much of the same effect. So in those cases, you really need to just check out the recipe and what it's calling for. And if you're mixing in any of those other types of ingredients, if you're putting chicken into your soup, probably a best practice maybe to cook that chicken ahead of time thoroughly before you put it in the soup, or just ensure that that soup is going to be cooked at a high enough temperature for a long enough time that you're going to be okay. And those sorts of times and recommendations can also be found at that foodsafety.gov website. But probably the most important thing when you're cooking something like that on the stovetop is don't double dip. So, you know, when you're cooking, you should be tasting your food to make sure that you're not over-seasoning it or under-seasoning it, or it's turning out how you want. But don't use the same spoon you dip into that chicken noodle soup to taste it the first time, to dip into it the second time to taste it, because you'll be transferring bacteria from your mouth into the soup, which is pretty gross. So you don't want to be doing that. You know, make sure you're always using a clean spoon or utensil or whatever to taste your food. And one more thing I'll mention about food safety during the cooking process, and this is kind of related to a concept we talked about in the last section, and that is be careful when you're using utensils to cook foods through the cooking process that might be risky. So what do I mean by that exactly? If you're picking up the raw chicken breast to saute it, and you're using some metal tongs to pick that up and put that in the pan, once that chicken starts to get cooked on the outside, you probably need to switch over to a new set of tongs or wash thoroughly the set you've got, because what you don't want to do is use those same tongs to manipulate that chicken through the cooking process that touched the raw meat at the beginning. Those tongs aren't getting cooked. The bacteria isn't necessarily being killed off of those just by being around heat. So don't use, again, during the cooking process, same utensils that you've used to handle the raw product that you're handling through the process down to the final cooked piece. Okay, so just to recap kind of the cooking safety section, it really boils down, in my mind, to temperature and time. So go to foodsafety.gov or your favorite food cooking website or your favorite cookbook on the shelf. They probably have safe cooking times and temperatures in there. Check those out. So when you go to prepare the certain piece of food, you know what the proper temperature is. And how are you going to know what the proper temperature is? You're going to use your handy dandy food thermometer that you hopefully already have or you're going to get soon. Don't double dip when you're testing your food for flavor, and make sure you're not using utensils that handle raw foods that are handling now the cooked foods that you're about to put on someone's plate. All right, now my favorite part. Let's talk about leftovers. I can remember in my younger days, and I bet you can too, doing something like this where I would order a pizza, bring it home to the apartment, eat a few pieces, maybe I had some friends over or whatever, they ate some, leave the pizza out in the pizza box, you know, maybe you shut the pizza box, leave it sitting on the coffee table in the living room, going to sleep, getting up in the morning, coming out and eating a piece of that pizza that's been sitting all night out at room temperature, eating a piece for breakfast. To my recollection, I don't think I ever got sick doing that, which is actually kind of shocking because pizza is not magic. Pizza is subjected to the same possibility of getting sick and having bacteria grow in it than any other food. And what's funny is I don't think I would have put any other food out all night like that and eaten it in the morning. So I don't know why I thought pizza was exempt from the rules of chemistry and biology. But in reality, I was playing pizza roulette. I'm surprised I didn't get sick. So FYI, pro tip, if you're still doing that with pizza, stop, put your pizza in the fridge when you're done. Okay, so let's talk about leftovers in general. There are some best practices, and actually, you know, working with leftovers, I think, is probably less cut and dry. I think people have their own ideas of what's the best thing to do, what's not good to do. I think it's much less cut and dry than the other sections. There's a lot more science, I guess, that goes into not cross-contaminating when you're prepping food or cooking food to a certain temperature to kill bacteria. But it seems like when it comes to leftovers, everybody kind of has their own idea of what's the right thing to do. One thing I hear the most argued about when it comes to leftovers is when you're done eating your meal or when there is food that needs to be put in the refrigerator, do you A, let the food come to room temperature before you put it in the refrigerator? Or B, do you put the food in the refrigerator right away, even though it may not have completely cooled down? What do you do? Well, I have an answer, and some of you will be happy and some of you won't when you hear this, but you should absolutely put your food in the refrigerator as soon as possible, at least within 2 hours of when it was cooked, if not sooner. Now, I know some of you are going to say, yeah, but when you do that, when you put food that's hot in the refrigerator, you're going to be heating other food up in the refrigerator and you might help bacteria grow on that food. So it creates an unsafe environment in the fridge. And that to some extent is true. Typically, that's only true when you're putting in large pieces of really, really hot food. So if you're boiling a bowl of soup and you throw it right in the fridge, yeah, not a good idea to put something that hot in the fridge because whatever's immediately around that is going to heat up. But if you're putting it in the fridge in smaller portions and you've let it cool a little bit, it's a lot less risky and less likely that you're going to really affect any of the food in the fridge. And when your food is cooling on the countertop, when it gets below that 140 degree temperature and it's working its way down to room temperature, it's bacteria city. They are thriving. They are growing. So you really want to get your food in the fridge as quickly as possible. Now, the best way to do that is you want to put smaller portions in the fridge for the reason I just mentioned that you won't be heating up other food in the fridge. And you're going to allow whatever you put in the fridge to cool down a lot quicker. So let's say you have a huge pork roast that you want to put in the fridge. Let's say your family is eating half of that and you still have a big chunk of pretty warm meat that's sitting out on your countertop and you want to put that in the fridge. Well, it's probably best not to put it in the fridge whole. What you want to do is you want to cut it down into smaller chunks. You want to increase the surface area so it can cool through quicker when you put it in the fridge. So cut your proteins down to smaller portions. If you're dealing with hot liquids or casseroles or things like that, try to put them in shallower bowls with a lot of surface area, and they will cool down a lot quicker when they get in the fridge. So again, if you have a huge bowl of chicken noodle soup, don't put the giant kettle right in the fridge, because it's going to take a long, long, long time for that soup to cool down to safe temperatures to prohibit bacteria growth. Try to put it in several smaller containers, and those smaller containers are going to cool down a lot quicker, and you'll be better off in the long run. Now, I mentioned earlier on in the episode that your refrigerator should be set to be between 32 and 40 degrees Fahrenheit, because again, below that 40 degrees, you're going to prohibit bacteria growth. But your fridge is an inefficient machine, and especially when you open up the door to look, you know, sometimes 20 times in an hour, like I seem to do when I'm looking for something to eat, you're letting cool air out, you're letting warm air in, and your fridge really has to work to keep the proper temperature. So for food that is a little bit more important to keep cool, especially your meats, your seafoods, and your poultries, those are the biggest offenders when it comes to leftover problems. Put those near the back of your fridge, because the back of your fridge will be cooler than the front of your fridge. So for items that aren't quite as critical to keep cool, like maybe your can of soda pop or, you know, whatever, put those towards the front of the refrigerator, because it's not as critical if those don't stay completely below 40 degrees. So your more important leftovers should go towards the back of the fridge. And by the way, the cleaner your fridge is, the easier it will be for your fridge to stay at safe, cool operating temperatures. So easier said than done, I know. Now, how long should you keep leftovers in the refrigerator? There are actually charts you can find that, depending on what kind of food it is, there are some different types of safe storage lengths. But for me, honestly, if it's past 4 days, I don't even trouble with it. If, you know, 3 days is optimal. But if you're going into 4 or 5 days, for leftovers, you could be risking it. So if you don't know when you put a leftover in the fridge, you probably shouldn't eat it. Because even if you pop it open and you take a whiff or you take a little bite, which you shouldn't do if you're not sure, because taste will not tell you definitively if something is safe to eat or not. So don't taste test your food if you're not sure. When in doubt, throw it out. Trust me, you'll much rather throw something out than take a risk of ending up in the hospital eating something that you shouldn't have eaten. When you reheat leftovers, you absolutely should make sure you reheat them to 165 degrees if you can, to kill as much bacteria as possible. When you microwave leftovers, you should let them stand for a few minutes after you get them good and hot, because that will allow the temperature to spread and cook more thoroughly throughout the dish. It'll allow it to reheat more evenly. And when you do go to reheat your leftovers, only reheat as much as you're going to eat. So if you have a giant plate of lasagna that you'd like to have for leftovers, don't take the entire lasagna out and reheat it if you're only going to eat one piece for yourself. Because really what you don't want to do is reheat food, put it back in the fridge, reheat food, put it back in the fridge. For one, that does allow bacteria to grow as it's going up and down through that temperature, optimal temperature range, but it also just kind of degrades the quality of the food. And probably by the third reheating, it's just going to be kind of gross. You're not going to want to eat it because it's going to be becoming like mushy. And so only reheat as much as you want to eat when you're going to reheat your leftovers. Okay, so to recap the leftovers, get them in the fridge as soon as possible. Put them into smaller containers or smaller pieces so they cool more quickly and they don't have a chance to heat things up in the fridge. And don't keep your stuff longer than 3 or 4 days. When in doubt, throw it out. Reheat everything up to 165 to make sure you're killing any bacteria that has accumulated in the fridge. Because even though you can be below 40 degrees, there's still bacteria. It just doesn't grow and replicate quite as quickly. All right, well, I've gone on and on about food safety, probably too long. And again, I didn't mean this to be scary on the one hand, nor comprehensive on the other. So I'm going to put some links in the show notes for you to go check out for food safety. If you have any burning questions, or if you think I'm totally wrong about letting food cool down to room temperature before putting in the fridge, go check it out for yourself and see what you can find. And if you do find other information or you have other tips, I would love to hear from you when it comes to food safety. So you can email feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. I would be happy to hear from you and get your comments on the show. If you're so inclined, you can also call me and leave me a message, and I would love to get that on the show as well. And you can do that at 971-208-5493. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast and Twitter at TKCpodcast. And if you enjoyed what you heard today and you got some good information out of it, I would really appreciate it if you'd consider going over to iTunes and subscribing to the podcast or leave me a review in iTunes. That really helps out with the rankings in the iTunes store. Okay, until next time, I really appreciate you taking the time to listen to me about food safety today. Next week, I will be back and I have some fantastic fall recipes I'm going to share. So get your casserole pans out and clean and get your kettles ready. We're going to have some fun. Until next time, I am Roger at thekitchencounterpodcast.com. Thank you for listening.